Hello to all you faithful patrons of Shea Bippy, and welcome to another episode of the Shea Bippy Mob Pod, a podcast you can't refuse. I am your co-host, Mike DeBate, and I am joined, as always, by my good friend, the proprietor here at the Shea Bippy Bar. He is the Sonny to my Jimmy Whispers, and fear not, folks, Shea Bippy may be closed because of the difficulties that we're having right now. We are being socially distant and responsible, but we are open for takeout. A little espresso, a little cannoli, a little biscotti, all good. But he is my good friend, Thomas Murphy. Murph, welcome back to the Bippy. In a different environment than we're used to, my friend, but the spirit remains the same.
It does. It does. You're down one end of the bar. I'm down here at the other. We got coffee cakes sliding us a nice little wine or whatever, and that's it. You know, it's a good time. It's a good time.
Absolutely.
I hope everybody out there is safe, and we hope, you know, of course, hope my co-host here and his wonderful family is behind closed doors and safe, and everybody here is good and just crawling all over one another. God.
So far, so good, my friend. I mean, we live in interesting times, and, sincerely, you know, we always go back and forth. We know that, you know, each other is doing well. I'm glad to hear that you are. I am as well. But for so many, it's such an uncertain time, such a scary time, whether it be health concerns, whether it be economic concerns. Everybody's dealing with something. So if you're tuning in to Shea Bippy here today, we hope to give you a little bit of a break from the news of the day and take you into the delving world of mob movies. And it's as good a time as any to binge watch some of these. So if you haven't had an opportunity, binge watch some of your favorite mom movies, and also binge listen to some of the wisdom and counsel that we've shared here at the Shea Bippy Bar when it comes to your favorite. You can find all of those on the Full Press Coverage app, which is available on Apple. It's available on Google Play. You can get all of it all in one place. That is an app you can't refuse for the podcast you can't refuse. So today, Murph, I figured, and we figured, that we would do something a little against the grain, something we haven't done much of here, and that is rankings and top tens. And to kick off the ranking in the top 10 right now, we decided, actually I should say my good friend here decided, that it would be good to kick this off with the top 10 supporting characters in mob movies of all time. So this was a fun list to compile. I don't want to speak for you, buddy. I think you probably had fun filling out this list, but I had a blast coming up with some of these.
I really did too, bud. I really did too. And it was hard. It was hard to just, you know, get it down to 10. And I'm glad that you went completely, socially responsible with this and just say supporting roles, supporting actors, because it wasn't just, in my list anyway, it wasn't just the guys. The girls got in there too. I thought about calling you and saying, let's just do a supporting actors one, and then in a couple of weeks we'll do the actresses. But, you know, nowadays it's just a role. A role is just a role. And you know, hopefully it's not a popover and there's something in it. Just to
Absolutely.
Go back to my blue heaven, what is it? It's a popover.
A popover. There's nothing in it.
It's a popover. There's nothing in it. We got something in it for you guys, and this is a full stuffed cannoli right here.
It's
a cannoli, you know. Oh, from
it
end
certainly
to end.
Is.
You know, if you want to call it a calzone, yeah, we double stuffed this one, and it's going to be a good time, man. There are so many great roles. There are so many great movies. I was doing research for this, I'm like, how am I going to cut this down to 10? But I did. I got it down to 10. And I bet you had just as much difficulty as I did.
I truly did. This was a really, really tough list to cut down. And I know there's going to be a lot of controversy in terms of, from our listeners, in terms of people that we may have forgotten, in terms of people that we may not have added in, some people on the list, maybe some question as to whether or not some people on our list are supporting characters. Maybe you
feel
they're
a
little bit more of the lead. But we'll define exactly how we went about it. What I did is I tried to imagine in my head what character was so central to the plot line of these movies. And in some cases, probably tipping my hand here, in some cases, these are movies that are sequels, and they go on in a saga. Who is the central character to that, you know, that plot? Who is a supporter that drives the plot along, but is not necessarily the main guy? And sometimes the supporting characters are more popular than the main guy, but you have to remember that there's usually a an antagonist that is the central figure of the movie.
Right.
So leaving them out, I kind of left everyone up for fair game at that point. So if you feel that maybe some of our, mine anyway, I don't want to speak for Murph, but some of our choices here might be a little bit more walking the line for the main character than a supporting character. That's definitely a debate.
And it was difficult. You know, who supported who in Donnie Brasco? You know,
exactly.
Who supported
that's
who
true.
In American Gangster? You know, yep. I mean, not a Little Caesar. You know who the movie's about. You know,
right.
Goodfellas. You know, it was a gray area, and I think we shaded it in pretty good.
I hope so.
In everything. So let's kick it off. Who was your number 10 supporting actor in a gangster movie, Bugs?
Well, you mentioned earlier that this is a list for the guys and a list for the gals, and I kick it off with a gal. And big surprise here, folks. I know everybody's going to be shocked that I went to this movie right out of the gate, but I have to go with Diane Keaton playing Kay Adams in the
there
Godfather trilogy. To me, I think just one of the central characters in all three movies. You look at the evolution of the way she played this character from a naive, wide-eyed, love-struck girl, basically, when she met Michael and being romanced by the thought of his family, the thought of the man that he could become, and then just watching the evolution or the de-evolution of her character going more and more into a level of despair when it came to, you know, part two, and just knowing that things were never going to change the way he had hoped, that the way she had hoped they would, and the way Michael had promised her they would. I thought she played this character perfectly, and I think one of the bright spots in Godfather Part 3, I thought Diane did a great job of bringing back some of that wide-eyed type of love that you saw, especially in the scene where the two of them are having, I think, coffee and just a little, afternoon, pick-me-up at the table. And you could really see the love between the two characters, between her and Michael. It was almost like they were able to step into a time warp and go back into the original premise of what brought them together in the first place.
It was. I was waiting for Johnny Fontaine to walk in right there. That was great.
Absolutely. And you could actually just hear him singing in the background if you look at that.
Yep.
So I know Godfather 3 gets a lot of a lot of railment, and we have yet to chronicle that here on the Shape of B Mob Pod, but I had to go with Kay Adams on this one, and I think Diane definitely deserved this.
She did, man. That was a great pick. That was a great pull. It was a role that spanned decades and that evolved in a way that not many did. And yep, she's in my honorable mentions down at the end. So that's it. My number 10 is I went completely off the map here, and it's Brad Pitt as Mickey O'Neill in Snatch.
Good.
Mickey plays an Irish gypsy. If you guys haven't watched this movie, please do. It's just a fantastic film. Mickey plays an Irish gypsy that is a boxer, and he gets caught up in the what we'd like to call the underworld of Great Britain, and he's involved in a boxing match that he ends up winning when he's supposed to lose. He's supposed to go down in this movie, and he's really a very central character in this. And this is one of those who's the lead actor, and when you have an ensemble film like this, it's really difficult. But I really don't consider him the lead in this movie. I definitely consider him a supporting character in this movie, and it was a fantastic film that I think everybody should check out. Everybody. God, why am I completely blanking on the director's name right now? I pulled my notes back up and I can't do it. So, yeah, it's a Guy Ritchie movie, and an amazing film. Once you get past his completely believable Irish gypsy accent, he's a traveler, and travelers' accents are very difficult to get into, but it's part of the fun of the film. You really see how deep he got into this role. How difficult it must have been for his his co-stars, because people have said, you know, time and again that he's a method actor and he completely immerses himself in this stuff. And he did as Mickey O'Neill. It's a great film. Go check it out.
Agreed. I think, again, an unsung role for him, and I think in a lot of ways, but it really shows his versatility. And I agree with you. I think that was a great pick. Definitely went to an area in this list that I'm glad that you went to, because I think it adds a depth and a realism to it that, to me, is just unparalleled. And that's why we share the microphone on matters like this, my friend.
You
bring
go.
That gravitas to it with all reverence in that. My number nine selection is Russell Bufalino from The Irishman, Joe Pesci.
Okay.
And I this may surprise a lot of people because of the newness of this and a lot of what a lot of people are, you know, lukewarm. And I think there was an initial buzz about this movie when it first came out. And I think people seeing it more, I'm noticing a little bit more of an erosion of the enthusiasm. But I think Pesci really was such a glue to this movie, and the way he played it, very understated, very against the grain in terms of the Joe Pesci type mobster that we're used to seeing, whether it be the Tommy DeVito or whatnot from Goodfellas. I think this was one of his best roles. I think this was one of his most versatile roles, and it really set the tone for the entire movie. I believe that he was the conduit between De Niro's character and between the Pacino character, obviously playing Jimmy Hoffa. He was the glue between those two worlds. And I think that the way he played this part, the understated way he played this part, the matter of factness with which he delivered his lines, to me, was second to none. So I was really intrigued by his role in this movie. I think he stole the show when it came to The Irishman, and that's saying a lot when you're talking Pacino and De Niro headlining this. I thought Pesci held his own and really, I think, in a lot of ways came out looking superior in some cases. So that's why I went with him. It's a little bit of a new movie to consider that. I know a lot of people may look at it and find that it's not going below the depths to some of these movies, but I was that impressed with it that I had to put him in my top 10.
Fantastic pick, man. Love the pick, love the movie, love the part. I mean, what more can I say than what you've just gone out with, man? That was great. Damn. I love doing this. We got to do more of these. My number nine is a tad bit of an homage to our namesake, the Shays Bippy, and I went with an actor in A Bronx Tale, and I might surprise a few people with this pick, but I thought this guy was fantastic in this movie. One of the best young actors to come along in a very, very long time, and I'm just going to throw it out there. It's Francis Capra, who played a 9-year-old Colosimo in a monster. You know, it's this kid walked onto a movie set and sat down with some of the greatest actors and actresses in film history. I mean, in history, the people that are on screen in this movie are it's a Venn diagram of great mob actors, you know, guys that have been, you know, for good or bad, typecast as mafia movie guys. and of course, you know, right up there at the top, we know who's right there at the top, and that's De Niro. And this kid held his own with all of them. One scene always sticks with me with this movie and what Mr. Capra did. And that's when it was right after he witnessed the murder on the street while he was sitting on the stoop and wondering what was going on. And actually it was a little bit after that. And he's in confession. Now, Mike can attest to me with this, what it's like to sit down in confession. And some of you out there might too, but it's, he's sitting down and he can't really bring himself to talk to his priest about what he just witnessed. And his priest looks at him, you know, looks through at him and he says, you know, don't be afraid, my son. No one is more powerful than God. And Colosimo goes, I don't know about that, Father. your guy may be bigger than my guy up there, but my guy is bigger than yours down here. And the priest looks at him and goes, hey, you got a point. Because, of course, he recognized the young man's voice. He'd been to confession, five or ten times before. He'd seen him at Mass every Sunday. He knows who this kid is, and he knows what's going on. This has already gone throughout the neighborhood. Everybody knows, and nobody's talking, and nobody's saying anything. And the priest is just like, kind of gave him a pass on it. Yep, you got a point there. But that's it. Francis Capra in A Bronx Tale as playing a 9-year-old Calogero from taking a shot to, learning to keep his mouth shut to really understanding that, that there's a difference between friendship and family. There's a difference between being loved and being feared. It all started right there with that little kid sitting on the stoop. That really hooked me into this movie, and I loved it. And he's been in a few films after that, nothing as big as this, but at least he didn't end up going to prison like some other people in that movie. So that's
very, very
number
true,
9.
Yes.
You thought I was going to go there, didn't you?
No, I actually, when you said a young actor, I kind of figured you were going to go with Capra, and I'm so glad that you did. His role, I think, was so underrated. I mean, people look at A Bronx Tale and they remember the teenage Calogero. And say what you will, the part was played extremely well. Great casting. I mean, he really does look like Robert De Niro's son. I mean, that is about as good as casting as you can get. But Capra had such a realism to him. And being at such a young age, I love the scene where he sits down with Chaz Palminteri as Sonny in the bar for the first time. And they're talking about Mickey Mantle didn't pay my, don't care about Mickey Mantle. He's not going to pay your rent. And those types of scenes and just the way he reacted to what Chaz was saying and the way that he was able to hold his own with those actors, especially Palminteri and De Niro, was phenomenal. So I really love that pick. I'm so glad you went there.
Thank you, my friend. What do you got up next for us?
Absolutely. So moving right on to number 8, and we're moving on to one of the first movies that we chronicled here on the Shape It Be Mob Pod, and that is Steve Buscemi's portrayal of Mr. Pink in Reservoir Dogs.
Oh,
and you could have
gone
in a lot of ways with this. You really could have. I mean, you could have definitely, gone with a number of actors in this movie. But to me, Buscemi's offbeat style that he used in this movie, and I think really put him on the map in a lot of ways and really kind of alerted everyone just to how talented this guy was and how versatile he was, is something that I loved. I loved his character from start to finish. I thought it was brilliant. I thought the way he played it was dynamic, and I just loved the quirk that he brought to that. I can't imagine anyone else playing Mr. Pink than Steve Buscemi, and to me, that's the indelible mark of a movie, and the indelible mark of a character is when you make it so much your own that you cannot envision anyone else being able to play it. To me, that's what he did with this movie. Reservoir Dogs, one of my favorite Tarantino movie, actually, and was one that I was glad that we were able to chronicle early on here. So, number 8, Mr. Pink from Reservoir Dogs, and a big shout out to Steve Buscemi, who did a great job in this film.
He was fantastic. He's fantastic in everything, and that's a difficult movie to pull somebody out as a best supporting or role, because Tim Roth was fantastic in that as Mr. Orange.
Absolutely,
and,
Mr. Orange. Yeah.
Even Quentin in his little scene as Mr. Brown that was pretty cool. It is a great movie, and it was one that we chronicled way back. You can go to our webpage and find that sucker. Please do, because it was one of my favorite ones to go over. It was early though. We weren't as good at this then as we are now. I think we've gotten a little bit better.
Growing pains. You can see the evolution of the Shape of the Mob Pod from start to finish, and I think it's a good masterclass. So dynamite drop in. I like that.
There you go. And number 8 for me. This was a defining character in a lot of our lives growing up. If you were a fan of the gangster genre, of the mobster movie, he was almost too good to be true. A man like this, to a man that he served and served well his entire life. And that is Richard Castellano as Clemenza in The Godfather. This was an amazing role. It was a role that, as you know, just to steal a line from my partner here, that you can't see anybody else playing. You really can't. Nobody is Clemenza but Richard Castellano. And it was. He made this role his in a way that not many actors do, and especially not many actors that don't have the star power that others do. This man actually wrote part of this movie. Okay, he ad-libbed and wrote in some of his own lines. Leave the gun, take the cannoli. That's his. That was his.
You're absolutely right.
And it's timeless. It's something that you know, all of us say, you know, when you're peeking back into the kitchen and you're heading out the door, and it's you want to remind your wife not to forget to grab something, or your buddy not to forget to grab something, and you're pointing at a six pack of beer and you say, leave the gun, take the cannoli, when you're pointing at the beer. So it's a beautiful part. It is not the biggest supporting role in this movie by any means. He was only in the first movie. There was difficulty getting him to reprise the role. He actually wanted more input into it, and that's why I heard that he was left out of the second movie. I really would have liked to have seen the way that character evolved. But no, Richard Castellano as Clemenza in The Godfather.
Great choice. Great choice. And you know what? It leads me so well into my number 7 choice that I don't want to steal your thunder and reiterate anything that you just said, because everything that you could possibly say about the Clemenza character, you summed up so nicely. My number 7 choice is actually the replacement character for Clemenza in Godfather Part 2, which not a lot of people realize was an add-in after they couldn't get Castellano and agree on a deal to bring him back for Godfather Part 2. And that is Michael Vigazzo as Frank Pentangeli, Frankie Five Angels from The Godfather Part 2. And I really love Gazzo's portrayal of this film, in this movie. I think he was indelible. People quote him all the time, constantly. Again, I think another actor that you really can't see playing anyone else. Anyone else would not be able to give the gravitas to this character. I think he did a tremendous job. But the character itself, I like to look at as Michael Corleone's conscience from the old days. This is a reminder of what his family used to be. And I think in a lot of ways, I think it makes Michael uncomfortable sometimes being around a guy like Frank Pentangeli, who reminds him of what his father used to do, how he used to run his business.
Yep. You choose a Jew over your own blood.
Exactly. Absolutely. No, that was the indelible mark that I think Gazzo made this film, and him being able to play this so well, and the Pentangeli character, I think, was just so well written. It was so well done. The betrayal of how Michael realized that all of the ties that he may have had to his former life were no longer there. He was, you know, he was disenfranchised by his brother, by everyone. And I think this was the bridge character that kind of bridged those two together and really, I think, brought a lot of the old school Vito Corleone, Clemenza, Tessio, these things brought them into the modern day with Michael. And he realized that, you know, Pentangeli might be his last link to that, and he had to leave it behind. He had to eliminate him and move on in order for his own survival, or at least he thought at the time. So, Frank Pentangeli, my number 7. I toyed with putting him at number 5 simply because it was Frankie Five Angels, but this list was just too hard to whittle down.
Brilliant.
But he definitely deserved a top 10 nod.
It is. I can close my eyes and I'm sitting there growing up, even being an Irish kid, growing up in my town here in New England, in Middletown. It is the Italian experience is indelible. And when you go to parties, when I was a boy, there would be a band in the back, and Frankie trying to teach the band out there in the what town were they in Reno, outside of Reno, how to play a good Italian song, and they ended up coming up with Pop Goes the Weasel, and the look on his face. It was, God, man, you hit it right on the nose, right on the nose. Brilliant, brilliant. My number seven is, so far we haven't overlapped anything. I'm kind of surprised.
No, we haven't, which is great.
And yeah, which is really cool, except for an honorable mention that I threw in there. But my number seven is Ray Winstone as Mr. French in The Departed.
Ooh.
Another very quotable character. I think we'll find that throughout these lists. But Mr. French was the right hand man of Enzo in this film. He's also somebody that I didn't know a lot about when I first saw him, but he's such an accomplished British actor, it's unreal. And to pull off the accent that he did, which was just an American accent, he wasn't trying to go for Boston like so many other people in that film, just butchered. But it's still a good film if you look past that, at the line that he's sitting there, and he's like, I thought it was nice the way you asked him which hand he jerked off with when... handing the guy's hand, do you please take care of this?
And
he was great. And he was one of those guys that the character didn't have a lot of dialogue. What he had was really meaningful. And everything he did in that movie with his face and with his eyes and everything else, he was French. You know, when he was upstairs in the apartment talking to the guy who had knocked over a Brinks truck, and he's talking about selling him out. Here's us. Is that French outside? Because that's what it was, man. It was the fear that French was just outside. That was the scary thing. Not the gun that was pointed at him. Is that French outside? Oh shit! It was a great movie. Go check it out, The Departed. Ray Winstone, just a fantastic actor who just hit it out of the park with this one.
Great choice. And I'm so glad that you mentioned that. And I will get into The Departed. And my choice might be a little controversial, but I'm going to explain my position when we get to that level.
All right.
But I thought you were absolutely right on the money when it came to Winstone. I love the job that he did in that movie. Very quiet, very understated in the way that he gave his command, but especially in the bar where I love the scene where he explains to Leonardo DiCaprio, that's not a guy you can't hit, but it's almost the guy
the way
he delivers that to me is perfect. It absolutely just set the tone, and even DiCaprio's character reacting to that and just nodding along and going, okay, you know, like he right away, there was no question about who was in charge here, who was the guy that was going to tell him what was going on. Even the kid,
I'm
going to
make a
attitude.
Ruling right here.
Exactly, and he never questioned it, and it wasn't anything. And to me, I think that's such a testament to the way Winstone played that character. So I love it. I absolutely love it. And we have arrived at number six, my friend. We're moving right along here on this list, and it's definitely a good thing. And my number six character is a movie we've yet to chronicle here on the Shape of the Mob Pod, but hopefully we will do it soon. And that is Tarantino's classic, quote unquote. You can make the argument of whether or not this was his finest film. I happen to prefer Reservoir Dogs, but Pulp Fiction is definitely a movie that is the choice of the masses when it comes to Tarantino films. And mine is Ving Rhames as Marcellus Wallace. And I know a lot of people may look and say, this could be a lead. There's really not a technical lead in Pulp Fiction. There's a lot. I mean, most people would say that the lead character in Pulp Fiction is probably Travolta, Uma Thurman, even Samuel L. Jackson. But to me, I loved Ving Rhames' performance in this movie because of all the stories going on and all the parallels that were going on, he was the constant overarching figure that everyone had an eye on. And I just love the way that he was kind of the glue, I thought, that held this movie together. So I thought it was Ving's best role. I thought it was definitely the role that put him on the map in terms of showcasing his talent and his ability as an actor. I really love the way that he played this film. So not quite in my top five, but I thought definitely a top 10. And I put him a little bit higher than some of my favorites, some roles that maybe I personally prefer a little bit more, but I love the way he played it, and I think he deserves that spot. So Marcellus Wallace with my number six selection from Pulp Fiction.
There you go. And that's fantastic. And he is a supporting actor in this. I would have to give the nod to Travolta and Jackson as the main characters. They are the straws that stir this drink. But he is by far the coolest cube in that drink that they're stirring. And that great pick, man. A great pick. I love it. Oh,
thank you,
man.
Much appreciated.
Oh, we're gonna both end up binging a whole bunch of stuff. My number six, and this is a bit of a crossover, and I hate to do it, man. I really do. I just got the same movie, but we got a different character, and it's Harvey Keitel, Larry, aka Mr. White in Reservoir Dogs. I thought Keitel was fantastic in this movie. You know, he played the career criminal. All these other guys that are brought together and they don't know one another. And Keitel is the cool head that prevails throughout all of it. And the look on his face at the end when he realizes that Mr. White is a cop, and it's just unreal. But you know, the standoff in the for lack of a better word, at the warehouse where they're all moving out, and you come in and they're pointing a gun at Mr. White, letting everybody, if you shoot this man, you die next. You know, I repeat, if you shoot this man, you die next. Because he was standing up for his buddy, the guy that he had really made a connection with in this crew. And it turned out that guy was the cop, and he was the one that was selling them out. And it just ate him up. It just ate him up that he ended up shooting friends, that he ended up shooting other gangsters over a cop, and he couldn't believe that he did it and the way he stood up for him. But it was a fantastic role, as we're talking about. It's a fantastic movie. The second, you know, mentioning that we've had of it today, and there it is, my number six, Harvey Keitel is Mr. White in Reservoir Dogs.
Great choice. And again, with Reservoir Dogs, it's hard to go with a bad choice. I mean, everybody in that movie was great. And, you know, I mean, you can make the argument that, you know, that some of these, you know, the actors, maybe the Madsen character, you can make the argument that maybe he's the lead. But I think in all aspects, I think in all ways of this movie, it was such an ensemble cast that any of these actors could be considered in a supporting role. And that, to me, is how I approach this. And that leads me to my number five selection. That's right, folks. We are in the top five already. And mine would probably be considered a lead actor by a lot of people that probably don't have an intricate knowledge of this movie. And it's a movie that my good friend mentioned earlier on, and it is The Departed. And I am going at number five with Jack Nicholson as Frank Costello in The Departed.
Okay.
And I know a lot of people are thinking that might be a lead. To me, if I'm looking at The Departed, I'm looking at two main lead characters. I'm looking at Matt Damon. I'm looking at Leonardo DiCaprio,
right.
Billy Costigan, Colin Sullivan. To me, those are the two lead characters. I think everybody else in this movie is a supporting actor. And the reason why Nicholson's character is so indelible is because he plays it so well. It's a caricature, I think, in a lot of ways, of Whitey Bulger. And I think he played this role so well. Nicholson was absolutely just devious beyond all deviousness, but still, and we talked about this when we chronicled this movie earlier, is he finds a way to make this character likable, even though there's no redeeming moral quality in the character of Frank Costello.
It's
at
funny.
The end, when he leaves everything to the Billy Costigan character, it almost endears you to say he loved that kid like a son. That was the one that he thought was the most trustworthy, and it almost gives you a heartwarming type of feel for the character, despite of the many, you know, terrible things that he did. I thought Nicholson was phenomenal in this. I thought his role of working with both DiCaprio and Damon elevated their scenes. I think some of the best work that they did in the movie was work that they did alongside Nicholson. And to me, I think when you can take a character and an actor and elevate your lead to being worthy of Oscar nominations, then I think you've done your job. So that's why I went with him as a supporting actor. Some people may look at it and think I cheated and say that it was a lead, but I still consider him a supporting actor, and that's why I went with Nicholson at number five in this.
There you go. It's great points, all well taken. And yeah, DiCaprio was the lead in that movie. It was his movie. And all the people that were propping him up did a really good job of it, and he was one of them. It was a totally believable portrayal by Nicholson. It was his fantastic movie. I could never turn past it when I see it come on the screen. It's you know, the only time I would ever turn this movie off is if it was cut up and edited for television. That's it. But we're at number five already.
We are at number five.
We're at number five already. All right, man. Well, let's get into it. My number five is somebody that I really identify with a lot because he's so fantastic at you know, just being a large man in a room and owning it and just knowing that's going to do it. But my number five on my list is Paul Sorvino as Paul Cicero. It's his consummate role. You know, Big Pauly is his it's fantastic. I can't put into words how real he made Goodfellas for me. I mean, you had seen everything. I mean, Scorsese is a master at casting roles. I'm not sure if he even uses a casting director. I think he just, you know, says, yeah, I want this guy. Yeah, I want that guy. And put my mother and father in it somewhere. But what Paul Sorvino did in this movie was it opened, it showed me what a real mob boss at that time and place was supposed to be like. Big Paulie didn't move fast because he didn't have to move for anybody. It was a fantastic line, and it just, when you look at him, you definitely saw that. That's the kind of respect that you knew that this guy had for his entire life, probably. And we got to see that character at its pinnacle. While we saw other guys growing up in the mob generations, this was a grown ass man who knew who he was and ran his family in the right way. And that was it. That I love this movie. I love Paul Sorvino and everything he does, from playing an evangelical preacher in Oh God to this. He's just fantastic, you know. And he gave us his daughter, which was really nice. She's a great girl.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. I think Mira doesn't get the credit she deserves for being the versatile and great actress that she's been.
Oh, no doubt.
You know, and you know, without question, I completely agree with you when it comes to that. But such a great choice. Such a great choice. Sorvino is truly one of my favorites. Understated, stoic in the way he played it, but it was perfectly played because it set the tone for the character. And again, it's one of those overarching characters that kind of has an umbrella over everyone in the movie. Everyone essentially was tied into Paulie somehow. Everything ended up coming back to him. And because of that, I think that, and the way Sorvino played it was just, I think, phenomenal. Right up until his last scene in the movie where he's just looking at Henry Hill with that look of disgust sitting there in the courtroom, just unbelievable, just that, I can't believe you did this. I am going to get you with everything that I have, you son of a bitch, and you're a dead man if I ever find you. And he says that without even having to grit his teeth or look. Nope. It's all in the eyes. And to me, I think that really says something about an actor. When you can do that and you can command a performance just with the eyes and just with a blank stare, I think it really, really says something to you. So great choice, my friend. Couldn't have been happier with that one. Okay. So as we start to inch toward the home stretch here, at number four, Officer Jim Malone, played by Sean Connery in The Untouchables. And again, I think this movie just really, I think one of my favorite mom movies of all time. I really enjoyed doing the Chronicle for this when we did this. I think Costner was phenomenal in this. I do consider him the lead. I do consider Sean Connery as Malone to be a supporting actor in this movie, but he, I think, was phenomenal. And again, the glue that kind of held everything together. Without him running into Malone on the bridge that night, Ness may not have had the courage, he may not have had the support, or he may not have had the wherewithal to be able to pursue Capone in the way he wanted to do it. He was down on his luck, and that moment changed him. And even though the character didn't get as much screen time as I would like to have seen him get, his presence in that movie is indelible. I can't imagine that story being told without the Malone character. And I think one of the great roles that that Connery has ever played, I think, showed off a lot of the versatility in the way he's able to do it. So many great supporting roles in that, but I had to give the nod to Malone on this simply because it's just one of my favorite movie characters of all time. So I was happy to see him in there. And, you know, that's my number four selection, Jim Malone from The Untouchables.
And if I remember from your tidbits, when we did the movie, he did win an Oscar for that, right?
He did. Yes. Yes, he did. Yep. Best supporting actor. So that one I have backing on. The Academy backed me up on that one.
Oh, no. So at least one of us does. And my number four is along the same veins. If, you know, it was the other side. My number four, I went with a woman here. And I went back to the movie that started it all for us, I think all of us. And it's Talia Shire as Connie in The Godfathers. All three.
Yeah.
Watching the arc of Connie in this movie, in this trilogy, if you will, in the saga, was phenomenal. To watch where she began as the bright-eyed, spoiled little brat, that, you know, just got the wedding of the century that she had always wanted, and you know, just a little daddy's girl, and to actually becoming the head of this family. Because in three, when Michael was down, when he was in the hospital, it was Connie calling the shots.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I'm sure her father would have never seen coming from his little girl way back when. But no, I thought she was unbelievable. You got to see her grow in this film series like no other woman in acting history, from point A to point C. It was phenomenal. Each go around, she was an amazing person, an amazing character to follow, from that spoiled girl to the widow who knew that her, you know, in her heart, that her brother had made her. And after, you know, especially after being so close to Sonny, and Sonny sitting there saying, do you think I'd make that baby an orphan? Well, no, she believed him, and she didn't think that anybody was capable of that, but Michael was. And seeing what, you know, she had become in part two, you know, the woman who hadn't even gone to see her children when she came back home. She was just there for money and wanted to get the hell out, to the head of the family at one point in time during three. It was a great character, a great role, and I don't know anybody else that could play it better than Talia Shire, Connie, as Connie in The Godfather.
Yeah, I don't think there was anybody that could have played it better. I think Talia was phenomenal in this, from start to finish, one, two, and three. I like how you brought that in, and I also think it's a good example of the evolution of society at the time, coming from an era in the 40s into the 50s where women were very subservient. Basically, you know, it was just, it was there, please the husband, and that's essentially what you were there to do. And then kind of getting a little bit of an attitude in the 60s, in the late 50s, in the 60s, and starting to emerge as your own person. And then into the late 70s and the 80s, taking the reins and actually being the head of the family for a while, it really is, I think, a good example of what the culture of women, you know, evolved over time. So great selection. You know, it's so hard to go wrong when you go with some of these indelible movies like The Godfather, and I think that's a very worthy selection. So excellent choice. Couldn't agree more. And I will go into a little bit of a different direction, but with a little bit of a same flavor, and that is a person that had a lot of screen time with Talia Shire in The Godfather. But again, I'm not going in that direction for this selection. At number three, I am going with Benjamin Lefty Ruggiero from Donnie Brasco. And you brought this up earlier, and I think a lot of people, again, like Costello, may look at this and say, well, that's kind of a lead role. I still consider this Depp's movie. I mm-hmm. still think he is the lead character from start to finish. Every plot line, every aspect he's involved with. The reason why I say Lefty is more of a supporting character is because he doesn't have a whole lot of interaction or any interaction with the FBI side of this movie, where that's where Pistone really becomes the dual personality between yep. Joseph Pistone and Donnie Brasco. He walks that line. To me, I think that really clearly defines who is the lead character in this movie. But if you're asking what were some of Pacino's most indelible roles, with the exception of Michael Corleone, I'd put this right up there with Frank Serpico. I'd put this up there with Dog Day Afternoon. Some of the great movies, even A Scent of a Woman, Lieutenant Colonel Slade. I still think this is one, to me, that shows a lot of versatility on Pacino's behalf. I love the way he played this role. I think he played it in a perfect supporting role to Depp's character. And one of the more tragic roles that you'll see him play. And I think he captured it perfectly, that worn down, I've worked my entire life and all they've done is give me more work. And at the end of the day, I'm going to get a bullet in the back of my head for all my troubles. And that's right. Exactly how his life played out in the character, in the movie. And this, to me, was one of Pacino's best roles. So at number three, I go with Lefty Ruggiero from Donnie Brasco.
There you go, man. That's fantastic. My number three is this is why I was more interested in the bottom end of these lists than the top, because we're getting a lot of crossovers. We're getting a lot of the same movies, but you can't deny it. You just can't. There are certain movies yeah. that are at the top of this pyramid, and certain guys that and ladies that just, you know, are too good to pass up. And my number three is Joe Pesci as Tommy D in Goodfellas. Pesci won an Oscar for playing this sociopath, and it was well deserved. We're back to, you know, I can't see anybody else doing this outside of I couldn't see anybody else doing this. I really couldn't. DeSimone was the most gangster person to ever be a gangster on film, and Pesci just knocked it out of the park. He deserved this freaking Oscar. It was an amazing role that he took to a new level, and it turned an actor who was a respected but not really well-known guy into a household name, and rightfully so.
Absolutely. I could not disagree more. And you know what? I won't disagree, because he was my number two choice.
All right.
And I think that blends in very, very nicely. Yes. Joe Pesci as Tommy.
Finally
D.
Happened.
The only actor that I have in my top 10 that had two slots in this, and it was so yep. well-deserved. I mean, you know, Do You Think I'm Funny, Spider Dance. I mean, these yep. are indelible lines that everybody that thinks of a mob movie, I think you really think of two things. I think you think of Don Corleone, you know, doing the little chin scratch when he does yep. that. And you think of Joe Pesci saying, funny how, you know, how am I funny? I
That's
just
it.
Think that just tremendous job by him. It put him on the map. It won him an Oscar, so well deserved. And to me, I think one of the greatest supporting roles that you'll ever see in movies, not just in this genre, in any movie. He took the movie and nearly made it his own, going against really heavy hitters like Ray Liotta and Robert De Niro. And he was able to make his mark on that movie. And in a lot of ways, he may be the most popular character in that movie. And that's saying something.
Yeah, he was on my list twice. I actually moved him out from number 10 because I didn't want to do it, two people in the same movie. But I got to respect you because, you didn't care. You put him there. And I had him at number 10 as Nicky Santoro in...
another great role.
In Casino. So,
another great role.
No, It really was. He's just an amazing guy, an amazing actor, who can't be talked about in any other way but with complete respect. Good job, bud. Good job. My number two is once again I'm going back in. Cue the horns, folks. It's Al Pacino as Michael Corleone in The Godfather. Pacino is the only man in the history of cinema to be nominated for an Oscar, both as the supporting actor and an actor playing the same role. And he got the first one, of course, for playing Michael in the first Godfather. It was a film and a role that touched me in a way that was, is indelible. And I think this is the third time I'm bringing this movie up. I'm just stepping all over myself, and it was beautiful. I can't. There's nobody else that could do it. It's Al Pacino as Michael Corleone in The Godfather.
Yeah, without question. I mean, how can you go wrong with that? And I like how you were able to extract the character from the original, which, technically you can say that part two and part three, he was in the lead role.
Yep.
In the original Godfather, he wasn't a supporting role, and I think a lot of people forget that. And tremendously played, a lot of deference to Marlon Brando in that movie, and being a part of that that genre, especially in a role that he wasn't wanted in. And I think that a lot of people forget that. We've talked about that several times here on Shea Bippy, and something that I don't think gets enough play is how much adversity Al Pacino had to go through just to get the Michael Corleone character and make it his own. He did that. And a big part of that is because he was such a great supporting actor in the first one that it vaulted him into being such an indelible lead. We have arrived, my friend. We have arrived at the top spot. And this one may surprise some people. I don't know if it'll surprise some people. It may not. It may raise an eyebrow, especially with a glaring omission on my list. But I'm going to explain that after we're done giving our number ones. The number one in my list is from a movie that we're, talking about quite often. And again, it's the third time I've dipped into this movie, but it's so difficult to eliminate these characters. And that is Tom Hagen, Robert Duvall's character as Tom Hagen in The Godfather. Wow. And The Godfather Part Two as number one. And I know a lot of people are going to raise their eyebrow on that and say, really? I'm such a fan of Duvall's work in these two movies. I think he was, again, very understated, and I think he was the conscience of this movie and the reminder to Michael of what his father was and what type of person his father was, what type of leader his father was. And in a lot of ways, I think it was, I mentioned Frank Pentangeli being like Michael's conscience to the old days.
Yeah.
I think that may be more true of Hagen. And I'll tell you, in part two, where you see Hagen having to get up and leave when he's about to talk to Johnny Ola, because he doesn't want to talk that kind of business in front of Tom Hagen,
yeah,
is to me what makes that character so powerful and so such an influence on the way he does business, and on the way he lives his life in a lot of ways. It was almost like Tom was that ideal that he did not want to see, the dark puppet strings. He didn't want him to see the dirty side of what he had to do. He had that reverence for him. And at the same time, he also didn't have a whole lot of faith in him either. So it was a real, I think, very very odd role for Hagen to play. He was a powerful guy in the family, but at the same time, he always felt like the outsider. And I think Duvall played that perfectly. So to me, the ultimate supporting actor in this, and that's why I ranked him so high in the number one spot, is because of the impact that he had on the Michael Corleone character, on the Don Corleone character, Don Vito Corleone, and even Sonny. He was that glue that kind of held all the brothers in check and together. Just phenomenal yeah. role, and I had to give him the nod in this one.
I can't blame you, and I can't argue it, and I never would argue with you, bud. like I said, there's going to be a lot of crossover here. There's going to be a lot of overlapping, and that's just the way it is, because this movie is at the top of the pyramid. It's the one that you know made it happen for most of us who made us all fall in love with it. And my number one of all time it's James Caan is Sonny.
Yeah.
You know,
I nearly went with that.
Yeah, I know.
I nearly went with that. And it's unbelievable, because I nearly went with him in the number one slot and he didn't even make my top 10. So that goes to show you like what type of, you know, how
it would be insult. I felt less insulted by the fact that you left him off the list than if you put him at number 7 or number 10. You know, that's just the way it is. There's only a couple of people that could occupy number one and not be anywhere else on this list, and he's it. And he was the prince of the city. He was the man. I don't know about you, but you know, when I was 12 years old, I wanted to be Sonny. Yeah. I really did.
No, I think everybody did.
Sonny was the reason.
That, yeah.
Sonny was the reason I drove a Cadillac. Sonny was the reason that, you know, I wore a suit for absolutely no reason whatsoever.
And it's,
but
it's
Murph,
true.
What's
I
Murph
mean,
doing in it? What's Murph doing? He's just Murph. He's just wearing
a suit. And
that's
the thing. He had it all.
And I was a 17-year-old kid who owned 3 freaking suits. And I would wear them out of the house just to go and go do shit. And it was a fun time in my life, and it was a great character. It's somebody that embodied his one side of his father, while Michael embodied another side of his father, and you saw that there when they were young. It was the man that was the family guy, but he went out and, you know, did what men do back then, because that's what men did back then, especially men like, say, it was just a fantastic role. And like I said, nobody else that could play that part but James Caan. And, you know, and especially for a guy who is Jewish to jump into an Italian world that way and own it the way he did, that was pretty cool.
It absolutely was. And again, you cannot argue with that. And I praise you so much for putting him in that role. And the reason why I went with Hagen is because of the presence in both one and in part two, and even the overarching presence in into part three, where you can kind of make the argument that that role actually should have gone to Duvall, meaning the George Hamilton role, which I think would have added another dimension to that movie. To me is why I went with that. But Sonny is definitely deserving of that. His presence in that movie is felt, even though he does not have the screen time that most of the other actors had in The Godfather. His presence is felt in every aspect of every part of those movies, that you cannot argue with that. So excellent choice. Cannot argue with it. And I think you made a fine choice.
Thank you.
There you have it, folks. Our top 10. And before we close up the bar today, quickly, my friend, one of the glaring omissions on both of our lists, and I don't necessarily think this is a glaring omission, because I do consider this character maybe more than a lead than most people do, but I wanted to get your take on this. Jimmy the Gent Conaway, do you consider him a lead? Do you consider him a supporting actor? Because I consider him a lead, which is why I left him off. Otherwise, I would probably have put him at the number one spot.
Yeah, I do. I consider him as a lead actor in that in that film. I know it's about Henry. I know it's Henry's life, but I De Niro's not supporting him in any way, shape, or form there.
Right.
You know, it's just not. He's being support. He's a lead role, and that's right. Why. And I did. I kept trying to figure out, should I do it? Should I not? You know, should I do it? Should I not? And it was the same way with him in The Godfather Part Two, which Pacino got the nod as a lead actor in being nominated, and De Niro did not. And yeah, I can't put him as a supporting actor in anything. I just can't. I understand why we both left these people off in two very iconic roles that a lot of people out there are going to be talking about. Well, why didn't you put them in there? Well, this is why. Because right. De Niro is just, he's not a supporting actor ever. It's just not. He's the lead actor.
Exactly. And I completely agree with you. I think that's exactly why I left him off. So a lot of people might be a little surprised that we did that, but I couldn't close up the bar today, buddy, without at least addressing the white elephant in the room, because I know a lot of people might climb all over that and say, how could you not put De Niro in there? It's because I think he is a lead in this movie, and much more so than maybe some of the other characters we've chronicled. This was an absolute blast. I had a great time doing this. I hope our listeners enjoy it, half as much as we did. If they do, then they're having a great time as well, because I love doing, lists like this. And to me, I think it was great that we didn't have a whole lot of overlap,
in terms of
characters that we put in, movies that we put in. I think we each, mentioned a couple of different ones at times. So I really do. I like what we've come up with, and hopefully other people do as well. So if you have suggestions on the next top 10 that you'd like to see Murph and I tackle here on the Shea Bippy Mob Pod, please reach out to us at MDABATEFPC. You can reach out to my good buddy at TeamMurph207. We're always open here on the Shea Bippy Mob Bar, unless you're socially distancing. And in that case, Twitter is a safe way to contact us. But before I close up the bar today and we go back to our social distancing ways, any parting thoughts, any closing thoughts here to leave our faithful listeners here with before we take our leave today?
No, I actually, I hope we get some new listeners that are just tuning in for the first time to this show at this episode, because it really did. We just covered a lot of ground in an hour of a bunch of movies that we've gone over before, and I hope you go back and listen to them. It's something we haven't done before, and like Mike said, I hope we do it again and do it real soon, because this was the most fun I've had, since we started doing this. And there are a lot of episodes out there now, but I really enjoyed, just going back and forth and talking, because it was a complete, we left this as a complete surprise to one another, folks. We didn't, here's yours, here's mine, and let's go back and forth. And that's what we started doing this for. And this is my favorite episode that we've done so far. But then again, I said that about the last episode we did, and the episode before that, and the episode before that. We just keep it, just keeps getting more and more fun and better and better. And I want to thank you all for tuning in and listening in. And I want to thank Mike for including me in this.
Oh, you kidding me? It's my pleasure. Thank you for including me in this. This was a mutual brainchild that kind of...
Yeah, it was.
It kind of was born out of thin air in a lot of ways, and it really has become one of my favorite things to do. Anytime I can share the microphone with this fine gentleman, who is really not just a friend of mine, he is a brother, he is familia to me, and I always enjoy this, and we hope that you enjoy it as well. So, on behalf of my good buddy Thomas Murphy, I am Mike DeBate. Thank you so much for joining us here today on Shea Bippy. Now, you can't leave, because you shouldn't be leaving. You should be social distancing. You should be staying at home to save lives. But for the purposes of this podcast, now you can leave and go on throughout your day. Stay safe, stay well, and have a great day, everyone. And we look forward to seeing you again here on Shea Bippy real soon.